Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to the ninth edition of Spit in Silver and Black. I am Kalen Sokel, and I have a Raiders season ticket holder, super fan, and he's been to the Raiders Stadium groundbreaking, owners meeting, and everything leading up to the move in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, Rocco.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Kalen.
Anytime. We have a jam-packed show for y'all today where we discuss the win now added to the Raiders staff after the Golden Knights won immediately, how the draft picks helped the Raiders win now, and how the draft in Las Vegas will compare to the highest-rated draft in history in Nashville. Rocco, what is your thought on the Raiders' win now, with Mike Mayock saying that Mark Davis compared Mad Max Crosby to Tim Jenkins while making Cleveland Farrell the first of three first-round picks?
Yeah, the draft was quite interesting from my perspective. Listening and watching Reggie McKenzie over the last couple of years, and then Al Davis before him, making picks. This year has a different feel to it. And I've been telling a lot of my friends and a lot of Raider fans to just relax, you know, just go through the process. And this year's draft was quite different in the fact that, like Mayock has been saying, that they wanted to draft foundational players, and it's a strategic move, and they've been doing strategic moves for the last, since Gruden came on board. They're looking at bringing people in that love football, that want to play football, that also are high character guys, and that's what it seems like with the individuals that they picked, and especially in the first round, and actually all through that draft. They seem to have picked these guys that just have their heart set on being good football players, good role models, good people in general. And that's going to lead to, you know, for the foreseeable future, looking past this year, this last year at Oakland, and then going into Las Vegas, they're looking for those individuals that are going to lead this team going forward and potentially be good players. You know, we would never know, you know, drafts are not set in stone with the players that they pick. But going forward, it looks like they're looking at specific individuals, specific players, and individuals call them? Gruden grinders. Now we could say maybe Mayock maniacs. All these individuals going forward, and you'll see a good representation this year going into or finishing out this year and then going into or coming to Vegas. And setting that standard for, we'll go back to the old saying, commitment to excellence going forward, hopefully, you know, for Vegas and bringing a winning attitude and a winning team to Vegas, which will be important for the following, you know, for the fan base and for Las Vegas to get settled into this new stadium and a new NFL team in our market.
Yeah. Because, you know, the win now attitude, they picked up half the draft picks were from Clemson and Josh Jacobs from Alabama from the national title game which Mayock attended. And, you know, those players know how to win. They won at Clemson. They know how to win now, and they know how to lead a team and lead them to that winning mentality, which they will need after, you know, the Golden Knights came to Vegas and won immediately, went to the Stanley Cup, went to the playoffs 2 years in a row. And, you know, they needed guys like that. They need guys who can build the foundation, put guys on the field, put them in the right path to teach the other players how to win and make sure that they respect them for years to come. Because I know Farrell at Clemson was a leader on and off the field. He was well regarded by teammates that, you know, he was a true leader, and players respected Correct. Him. And he was the leader of the defense over there, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? And I look back at last year's draft, even though it was McKenzie and Gruden, I look back and you look at, you know, some of the people or some of the draft choices that they made with Arden Key and Maurice Hurst and PJ Hall. These guys all have motors. And what I saw with them is they want to play and they want to stay Raiders. And if you see some of the comments that they made last year as a rookie class, they want to stay Raiders. And I think they love working for that team. And I think they love being part of Gruden's Grinders. And it started last year and this year. And you know what? The Golden Knights, you mentioned the Golden Knights and the development that they have gone through. They embedded themselves into this community. They were Vegas born. It's on the license plate. And that's what the mantra is they were Vegas born. And that's a unique situation for that hockey team and for our community, because it was right after the Route 91 massacre tragedy. They embedded themselves in this community. At the same time, they became a winning product, which helped the fan base, which helped our community, the Vegas Strong community, to get over and to help heal through that whole tragedy. For the Raiders, it is imperative. And I hate to say it, but it is imperative for them to get off on the right foot to get the Vegas fan base. Cause honestly, we are a very finicky fan base. You know, I remember coming here in the mid-80s, and I was in the military back in the '90s, and I came back home and we were just going through that with the Rebels, the Running Rebels at that time. And we were all in on the Rebels. And they became the national champions, and you saw the community come together. We didn't have anything after that. It's been a steady, and the football team, the Rebels football team, as you know, it hasn't been that great. But to have the Golden Knights from in their first year as a expansion team to go and make it to the Stanley Cup Finals was amazing for this city. And that's what we need to see with the Raiders. And I think it goes back to Gruden and Mayock having a strategic plan, Mark Davis and his team having a strategic plan going forward and this is going to be a unique year for the Raiders. And they should, and I say this, they should have a fairly successful year this year with the players, not only the draft, but the free agency or the free agent players that they brought in to assist. They should have a very decent year this year to get on, you know, and we have a rough, you know, the AFC West is always competitive, but I think we should make strides this year going into next year's draft and free agency with the ability to bring another couple of first rounders, some more Gruden Grinders, Mayock maniacs that I call to continue making the nucleus of this team to be a successful team coming into Vegas.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about the flaky fan base, you saw that even with the Knights this year. When they were on their skid, there were a lot of away fans coming to games and everything. You saw more away fans. And, you know, teams need to win when they are in Vegas, because no one goes to the Run Rebels games. These days, it's almost like, you know, I mean, there were reported about 7,500 people, 8,000 people at every game. And so, and I agree that, you know, the Raiders need to win now, of course. And
winning cures everything.
And win
winning
in Vegas.
Cures everything.
Oh, it does. It does. It definitely cures everything and makes everyone feel good. And, you know, that's how you draw the fans, because to make it winning makes people feel good, and they'll attend the games because it makes them feel good for that day and the rest of the week. Because I know even when I was in Cleveland, when a team would win a game, you know, but the whole city, it lifted up the city. And, you know, it does the same here with, you know, we've seen with the Knights, we've seen with the Rebels when they beat Reno this past year in football. You've seen it when, you know, UNLV wins.
I was at
like,
that. I was at that game, Kalen.
Oh wow! Same here. I was with Joe with that game. So.
Oh, were you? Yeah, I didn't know Joe was at the game.
Yeah, I was. I was doing events at
RedRiver.com. Yeah, my daughter actually, you know, and I hate to say this on the air, but my daughter actually goes to Reno. And, so it was important for her to be down here during that game. Yeah, so she wasn't happy.
I bet. I mean, I work over at somewhere in, downtown Stumlin up here, and one person actually transferred from, believe it or not, from Reno to go to UNLV, and they were stoked. They were stoked after that game.
Very good.
Going back to the Raiders talk, what you said about strategic plans, you saw that today in this draft. You saw, I mean, I got a feeling that Mayock and Gruden, they worked very well together, and, you know, they felt like they didn't reach for a player. They got the players that fell to them. They didn't have to necessarily trade up to get any player. They got what fell them. I know Joe was saying to me earlier that the Raiders had offered a trade down, but it didn't work out for either side, so that's why they took Farrell at 4. And I know that several people on NFL Network, they said that if Mayock had slid Farrell that high in a mock draft, everyone would have thought that was a steal. But because he's not there during the mock, you know, people thought he was somewhat overdrafted, but you know, I do think
they predicted
that sets a tone for that team.
Mayock predicted at the, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe after all the pro days, he made the statement, or there was a statement out in the media that there was going to be a surprise pick at 4. And, you know, everybody had their thought process that it was either going to be Quinnen or maybe Kyler doesn't get picked at 1. Maybe Nick Bosa doesn't go. So there was a lot of, and it mostly revolved around all the Twitter GMs and all the medias that was thinking that the Raiders were going to go with a quarterback at 4 or trade up, you know, for possibly a quarterback. Cause that was, everybody was saying that. There was, it was ridiculous, and it was driving me crazy. It was making me like nuts. So when they made that statement, I think it was Mayock that made the statement in the media that it was going to be a surprise pick. It lived out to be true. It was a surprise pick because I was at the, as a club PSL holder, I had the ability, the Raiders threw a draft party at Dre's nightclub on the first Thursday night.
Oh yeah. I saw that. I saw that. That looked cool.
Yeah, it was packed. There was a lot of people there. It was standing room only. The good thing was they were serving free beer. That was good. When they made the pick on Farrell, there was people taken back. It was almost like going back to the days of Al Davis when he'd make a Darius Hayward Bay pick. It was almost like, whoa, this guy wasn't on the radar. And then when you sit and you watch all the reel and realize that Cleveland Farrell, he's going to be a good player for the Raiders. He is going to be a centerpiece for that defense. We'll see how it plays out.
He's the guy that people look up to.
Yes. He is a person that I think sets a standard for other players. And you pair him with like a Maurice Hurst and PJ Hall. And Arden Key seems to be building into a good role model. If you watch him on Instagram, he's a new dad. He's got a baby. And you watch Maurice Hurst, he's going to Michigan or all these business schools. They're putting a lot of emphasis on leadership, you know, through education, through being family members. So you're starting to see this nucleus being developed. And when Farrell was taken, it was like, oh wait, he's not a Josh Allen. He's not a Quinnen Williams. He's not a Nick Bosa, but you know what? He brings an intensity from a different standpoint, potentially with the leadership ability. and he fits Gunther's defense.
Yeah. And you need guys who fit his defense with how terrible the defense was last year. I mean, ESPN had them rated in the bottom 10 of the league. And it's like, you know, you need guys who fit that defense to take that to another level, because that was really a weak point in the team. Because, you know, I've said this before, Derek Carr through 10 games didn't even throw an interception. I mean, you think the offense was a problem last year? I mean, to an extent it was, but they still scored 40 in some games. And, you know, but the defense gave up too many points for the offense to even have a spot to shine.
Derek Carr is not the problem for the Raiders. And I've been beating this drum. You know, I've been beating this drum. When you have a defense over the last, how long has he been? 5 years? This is going on his sixth year. And probably the best defense he had, if I'm not mistaken, was 16th in the league. And that was the year that they were 12-4. Defense, their coaching, Norton and Del Rio, they were defensive specialists, but they could never get the right players, the team, the defense to really, they had some good games. They had some good players, but it never really panned out. Gunther, we got a real defensive coordinator. We're building this nucleus of a defensive team to maybe help stop the offense on the other team. Maybe give the ball back to Derek Carr so he can do his magic with a new set of receivers and now a first round draft pick for a run. I don't remember a running back ever going in first round for the Raiders except Marcus Allen, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, having him as the now potentially featured back, and who, you know what? I watch my wife is from Alabama, and my wife and I get to watch all the Alabama games. So watching him part time running with mixing it up with Damian Harris, that kid was electrifying with the opportunities that he got. Now, put him in the role as Charlie Garner from when Gruden was the coach the last time, I think it is going to shine. He can block, he can run.
Yeah, and he knows how to win too. And, you know, I saw some of his catches. I looked at him, I was like, is he a receiver? Because it's like the way he catches the ball, it's almost like a receiver does, is Tua threw it in stride and he caught it. And it was like, you know, where this can come from? Because, you know, I know at the beginning of the year, I believe Davian Harris is supposed to be a lead back, but Josh Jacobs took that role and ran with it. And, you know, he shot out draftboard with his multifaceted, style and, you know, less yardage. And he also knows how to win. As we said, they need a win now attitude. And he's a leader. I don't remember him getting in trouble at all at Alabama, which is a good thing. And then with Crowell going down with the Achilles injury, you know, it's even a better pick for them because, you know, being in need of a running back now, I mean, they signed Doug Martin, but he's not what he used to be in Tampa Bay. And he missed his 700 yards last year. And Josh Jacobs this year is going to, you know, sort of be the bell cow for the Raiders, be that multi-dimensional guy who the Raiders have needed for some time. Because, you know, I mean, when was their last good running back? I know he played for Dallas a couple years ago.
McFadden. McFadden.
Yeah, McFadden, thanks. And the person who can take the ball and run with it, and he fits Gruden's offense. Another perfect fit for the system that they're implementing.
Yep. And, you know, from a running back, and I'm going to go back to the defense here in a second, but another running back that intrigues me and he was put on IR last year because I believe that the leadership believed that he would probably get picked up if they left him on the practice squad. Well, is Warren, Chris Warren III. That kid intrigues me as a running back. And just at that Green Bay game, in preseason, you know, and that's just a small sampling of his work. We don't know what his work ethic is. We don't know how he goes about his business like the leadership does. He intrigues me though. He's big. He's physical. He's quick, or for a guy, he's powerful. And he was running through people in that Green Bay game. He was running through and over people. I'm curious to see how he gets his shot and if he sticks on the roster this year or if he's going to go to a practice squad.
Yeah, but you don't keep a guy with an injury, you know, for a whole year, even if he's undrafted. You don't keep a guy unless he's going to do something or you have a strong belief that he is going to do something. I mean, you know, normally guys who are undrafted do at least if they're placed in IR.
Yes, I have a feeling that if he makes the squad, he's going to make probably DeAndre expendable. He might make Doug Martin expendable because he is going to be the Tyrone Wheatley from the late 90s, early 2000s. He's going to be the Tyrone Wheatley to Josh Jacobs being the Charlie Garner in Gruden's old offense.
Yeah. Because, you know, in Gruden's offense, you need backs who can, you know, carry the Duke and you need multifaceted, running backs, in which case, Chris Warren can be that one.
Now, going back to the defense real quick, with, our third first round pick, John Abrams, the safety, from Mississippi State.
I love that kid.
That dude is a missile. And now here's the interesting thing that I'm looking at him and the way he goes about his business, very charismatic, you know, watching Good Morning Football. He was on there before the draft and that kid is just impeccably dressed. He carries himself well, very charismatic. Seems very dedicated. He has a child. Seems like a good, you know, individual. Seems like a leader. He talks a lot of trash on the field, but he backs it up. And pair him. Now, I heard there's some, like, a lot of, here we go again with the Twitter GMs out there saying that the Raiders are putting Carl Joseph up on potentially up for trade bait. I want to see those two because Carl Joseph lays wood when he gets the opportunity. You put him and John Abram together, those dudes, it's going to be like the old Raiders, the Raiders that I remember from back in the 70s. Tatum, Atkinson, just blowing people up. Soul Patrol.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I researched Abram myself. And those hits that he delivers, I was taken aback. I mean, one problem I did have with him, he tries to track the ball well enough, but he just doesn't seem to get that big interception or get that big play. I mean, he did have a few in college, but, you know, that's one thing I didn't like. But his big hits and his pass breakups, he can do those on a regular basis, which the Raiders have needed for quite some time, you know. I mean,
I think he'll be
old Raiders.
Yeah, I think he'll be a lot better than Reggie Nelson. Reggie Nelson filled a spot for many years, and he's definitely going to be more athletic. But what he's going to bring, what he might miss in tracking the ball, and might, you know, not being able to find the ball for the interceptions, if he gets the opportunity to. And hopefully, or we don't get penalized, which, you know, it'll probably happen and we'll be yelling at the TV, but he's probably going to blow some people up, which is going to cause them to hesitate, get those alligator arms like, Terrell Owens used to have going across the middle because he is going to light people up along with Carl. They're both going to light people up and nobody's going to want to go over the middle. None of these small receivers. They're not going to be wanting to get hit like that.
Yeah. They don't risk another, you know, Wes Welker or injuries or too many concussions, something like that. They'd rather avoid that. I mean, and with his 4.45 speed, you know, it's of course going to make guys scared because he can stick with anyone.
Exactly. You know, I'm not upset with that pick. I think that was, again, he considers that Mayock considers that a foundational player. So I see him, you know, and they just look happy. If you watch the videos when they were, you know, of course, it's the moment of their entire life. They put in all this work and all this effort to get to where they're at. They get picked in the first round, which is financial security for them going into the future.
Yeah.
But they actually look, they're almost like last year's draft class. They look happy to be there. They look happy that they're part of this organization that has been around and has been doing what they do for, 30, 40 years now. They are they just seem happy to be there. And I don't remember a lot of people, you know, it was always a business thing over the last 10, 15 years, you know, with all the losing going on. These new draft picks seem like they want to be there. The free agents seem like they want to be there, which just bodes well for us going into the future, coming here to Vegas and hopefully getting our fan base established. Just like up in Oakland, you know, we're going to get some naysayers to start out with, but you got us diehards still there, getting tickets, showing up for games, doing what we do in the community, wanting to do what we can. And the team has been doing that also. They've been doing, you know, the charity work, the foundational work, to lay that groundwork, getting players here, getting the alum here so that they see and they feel us in the community, or they feel the community feels them out here to start. And I think that's impressive that they're doing both here in Vegas and still doing their thing up in Oakland, in the community up in Oakland. That just shows what Mark Davis brings to the table. He legitimately cares about the communities.
Yeah, and I know we had Leo Gray here about a month ago on the show, and he was talking about how much involved the Raiders are in the city, how they're a first-class organization, how they have built and are still building their huge sort of community outreach here in Las Vegas. A couple weeks ago, they had at a local high school, they had, you know, workouts, something like a combine for local athletes, and where they donated $25,000 in a check. And it's just great to see that community outreach. They're, you know, for them to get involved this early and even last year is, you know, a true testament to what they stand for.
Yeah, and going forward, once they get here, they're going to be dedicated to Las Vegas, and you're going to see the players out and about. You're going to see more and more functions at schools and community centers and throughout the holidays. You watch over the years, you watch like Donald Penn, he would get all the offensive linemen together and go and buy hundreds of turkeys and be able to give dinners away to less fortunate people in the Oakland community. You're going to see the same thing happening here. It's going to be full-time dedicated to Las Vegas, seeing the charity and the donations and what philanthropy that these players and the organization do for the community when they embed themselves in here. And it'll just make everybody, you know, everybody will see what they're doing, just like what the Golden Knights do with their foundation and their charities and what they're doing in the community. You're going to double that, because look at the NFL, look at the amount of players that that a team fields as compared to a hockey team. It's going to be just an amazing adventure going forward for this city and for our community and for the state of Nevada.
Yeah, because football is America's sport. I mean, hockey is, played more globally, but football, is America's sport, and Vegas is going to feel something different when they win, when they get more involved, because they sort of do double duty now, and when they put all their eggs in one basket here in Las Vegas, you know, it's going to be that much bigger, that much more felt around the whole city, and the vibe will be totally different around them as compared to what it has been. Brock, I mean, everyone is, you know, up in arms about hockey, but when Las Vegas actually gets an NFL team starting player, that is only going to be magnified. At least in my opinion, that is only going to be maximized to its fullest potential, because nothing excites the city more than football in the 8 games that they play at home.
Oh, and wait. And I know you wanted to talk about this too, is wait until next year's draft.
Oh yeah.
2020.
I mean, they were talking about last year, this year Nashville is being known as Nash Vegas. I mean, 600,000 people went last year, but imagine how many people are going to come here. They talked about the draft here going to be the first $1 billion event for Las Vegas. And they talk about how big it was there. And they don't think anything get here, but wait until they actually get here. Wait until they see how many people are going to flock here. How crazy it's going to be. Because, I mean, to be honest, they might as well cancel all these classes for the whole week, because, you know, it's going to be so crazy. It's going to cause so much traffic, but it's going to be so much fun, and it's going to be the vibe is just going to be like so much more electric.
Yes. I am convinced that it'll equal or bypass or surpass New Year's Eve. I truly believe that after seeing what Nashville just put on in their location, and I mean, no disrespect to Nashville, but Nashville is not Las Vegas. And to bring the new team and then bring an NFL draft here, holy cow. What an event. What? It gives me chills thinking about it, because how often does, you know, remember when they used to do the draft in New York every year at the same place? This is the smart new global NFL. And they are making, you know, despite all the problems a couple of years ago with the disrespecting the flag, they still get a lot of fans, and the fans will flock to, hey, it's a vacation in Vegas along with the NFL draft. Woo! How cool is that?
I know. It's going to be great. I mean, I can't begin to imagine. I mean, to be honest, Asheville has like nothing on us, because we throw those events every week or every day, I should say. And,
right,
you know, here it's going to be like the whole place will be rocking. And, you know, I mean, maybe a million people are going to come out for it, because, you know, who doesn't want to attend a draft in Vegas, you know? It was in New York for several years. You know, maybe they'll realize Las Vegas should host every NFL draft after this, you know, because, you know, I mean, of course the announcers, analysts are going to say, hey, this is a great place to host it. But, you know, they should look at Las Vegas for what it is and see the potential if they did more often here. Because next season is going to be crazy.
Yeah, and then take it a step further. Look at the strategic thinking that, you know, I go back to strategy and strategic thinking and global thinking, looking above and beyond, for the simple fact that this is a precursor to the use of our stadium for a potential Super Bowl, 2025?
Oh, yeah.
26, something in there. This is the precursor. This is going to show the NFL that we have the security in place, that we're capable of handling the volume of tourists that'll be coming in for a big event like this, which we've already done through the years. The NBA draft 10 years ago, the every year since 2000 going forward on New Year's Eve, we've done these big events, and it's secure. we handle our business. This will show the NFL going forward that this city would be capable of handling a Super Bowl, which is a whole nother spectacle of an event. And it would just generate so much. They knew what they were doing when they brought the Raiders to Las Vegas or to Nevada.
Yeah, they knew what they were doing. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I agree with you that the Super Bowl would be even a bigger spectacle here. But to take it, you know, they put the draft in cities where they can't particularly host a Super Bowl. But, you know, the Raiders were in discussions with 2025 for the Super Bowl. And with that being in discussion, they'll have to definitely take, you know, a second and third look at hosting it here because, you know, after the draft is just, they'll realize what they've gotten into. I mean, they know what they're getting into, but they don't really know until they actually get here.
Right. It's going to be stupid money. Stupid money for everybody. Stupid money for the NFL. Stupid money for Nevada, for Las Vegas. It's just going to be ridiculous. And it all starts next year. And I can't wait. I tell my wife this all the time, and I've been telling her since the inception of the thought process from the SNTIC, when they were going through the meetings here in Vegas about the potential and Mark Davis coming down here and laying it out. And from all those meetings forward, I've been steadily watching it with Joe and with Scott Winter and everybody. We've been paying attention to it with the owners meeting when they approved it. And we were down there in Phoenix. I was with Joe and Scott and Ed. We were down there when it happened and just the vibe that was going on, minus a few staying open fools, but everything was just like set and everything has just been happening. And now the stadium's being built. The draft is coming. The NFL, the Raiders, they have this figured out and they will have the fan base they need. We will have an exceptional team going forward. Our team is going to get better. Mark Davis bringing in Gruden for 10 years. There was a reason why he established a 10-year contract for Gruden.
Yeah, because
he knew that they needed consistency.
Oh, yeah.
Bring back a guy that Raider Nation loved back in the day and that we never got a chance to see the fruition of what Gruden was doing back then. Bring mm-hmm. him back. Now you got Mayock, man. Every step has been just an amazing adventure that I've seen, and I'm lucky that I've been part of it. Now I'm lucky that I have my seats. I paid my PSLs. I'm set for that. My kids will have them because all my girls, I have three girls. My daughters are all Raider fans. You know, they couldn't get away from it. They've been there up in Oakland. I take them every year. You know, I don't worry about the fan base hurting them. They have, you know, once I pass, and that's what I've been telling my wife going back to this. After everything's been said and done, I'm getting older, and I better damn sure make sure that I get to see one game, at least one game in this stadium. I have to live long enough to make sure that I see this game.
Hey,
I'm old, dude. I'm probably old enough to be your dad. But my daughters will always have those seats.
So
they're theirs. I'm old enough to be your father because my daughter is older than you. But yeah, I can't. I am so jazzed. I'm so geeked. I was so happy to hear. And what better way as a lifelong Raider fan? I mean, talking going back to the 70s, lifelong Raider fan that I've watched, you know, having to read newspaper articles because that's what we did in the 70s. There was no internet, no, none of that nonsense. And then recording games on a little Walkman. I'd sit and listen to it on a radio in my teen years and record it on a Walkman. So I have a game tape on actually Walkman. To the point where now my favorite football team, and I did, And I was never a hockey fan until the Golden Knights got here, but I'm same Raiders here, first, Golden Knights second. And to have my lifelong team come to the city that I live in and have the ability over the next, you know, however long I get the opportunity to be on this planet, to have seats in a stadium, to be able to go to football games on a Sunday, right down 20 minutes away, maybe longer with traffic, tailgate and parking lots, and we'll figure out the parking situation. That just makes me so happy. And it makes me happy for my daughters and for my family, because they'll be able to go to games too and enjoy the time and enjoy the family time. And I can't wait to the time that I get to see a Raider game and then go see a Golden Knights game in the same day. That's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. That will. And, you know, the city will have a good vibe then, because I know I lived in Cleveland. They have a football team. You felt that energy there. There was just something different when the Browns won than compared to, like, NBA or any other sport for that matter. And then I lived in Tennessee. There was, like, only a baseball team and college basketball and stuff, but there wasn't much. It was, like, Northeast Tennessee, Johnson City. And then I moved to North Idaho. There was nothing. You sort of felt nothing because nothing, no sports team was there. Then I moved here. And, I mean, it was with the Golden Knights, but leading up to the Knights, there wasn't that much big of a vibe as there is now with the Raiders, because you feel that. It's different. It's a different type of electricity when, you know, the Raiders are coming here, when the NFL comes in the city, when football comes in the city, when pro football comes in the city. There's just a different vibe about it. And you feel the city, you feel everyone get a little more excited because everyone knows that it's their sport. Everyone loves watching it because the Super Bowl is one of the most watched events in, you know, TV, on TV these days. And I mean, it's so different. That football vibe, it's really hard to explain. And I mean, for you, for your Raiders to come to Vegas, it's just, I'm just speechless. It's like, you know, to get your hometown team or to get your home team to Las Vegas, to your city, it's, you know, it's amazing. It feels like, you know, your long lost friend that you never thought would move, you know, come right down to Vegas and to your city. It's like, you know, it's like you never thought this could happen in a million years, but then all of a sudden it happens. And, you know, it's just special.
Yeah, I could tell you that I spend, you know, basically every day reading about the Raiders, looking at, you know, and I follow them on different, you know, social media platforms and all the players and everything like that. But there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't look at, read some kind, or go on the Oakland Raiders or the Raiders site, the official site. This is creepy, but I actually go on to the live cam of the stadium being built and look every day to see the progress going on with the stadium, which is amazing, and how fast they're putting that stadium up.
They only have 22 more trusses to put on too.
Correct. They've got it down to a T with I forget what his name, one of the Raider guys. One of the executives that is running the project, he said that they've got it down to where they can get a truss a day now. They, through trial and error, they figured it out from the first couple of them. So now they're going to be moving pretty quick with that. But yeah.
Yeah, the other day they have to do because of the high winds a couple weeks ago. I heard 18 mile per hour winds. If it's anything less than 18 miles per hour, they can put the trusses up. But if it's 18 or more, they can't put them up. They're stopped for that day because, you know, it's the most dangerous part of the project, and they need to have that down. They need to have it done by opening day, because I believe it's supposed to be done like a couple weeks in advance of the first preseason game at Las Vegas Stadium. And, you know, and for them to get it down to a T, get one truss up, then some days get two. That's spectacular progress. Because, you know, coming from nothing, then being built off-site, then putting on-site is just amazing work of art because, you know, the LA stadium's going to be opened at the same time, but, yeah. You know, have taken a year longer because it's built on-site and for amazing that project. Because I drive right by there every day on my way home from UNLV, and it's just
right. It's
just amazing how fast that thing has gone up. I drove by there the first day, and it's like, huh? This holds the NFL stadium? Like, huh? Like, I can't believe it's here.
Right.
And then I see it now, and I've seen it every day. I'm like, huh? Like, that was just yesterday. I mean, yeah. Like, it seems almost unreal how fast the project has gone on and how fast it has been built because, you know, a couple years ago, it was just dust and dirt over there. It was nothing.
Right. We got to give a shout out, and I got to give a shout out to 872 and those guys, Tommy White and their union and the union workers and all the local workers and contractors and everybody and all those individuals that are putting a lot of time and effort and blood, sweat and tears into putting this stadium and getting it done fast and safely.
I
haven't heard of any issues.
Yeah, I see them because I work over at Trader Joe's and some of them come through the store every day and I see them and it's like, you know, and I talk to them. They're like, yeah, it's going up. It's so great to be part of this project. Like, I'm part of the project. I'm one of the founders of this team. Like, it makes them feel so good to talk about it, and they love to talk about it because they're so proud of the work they've done, which is so great. And, you know, and then they just can't wait for it to be done because it's like, they're so excited. And I do have to give a big thank you to, you know, 702 for, you know, sticking to the project and doing everything humanly possible to get that big, huge, project done on time. I believe they said it's supposed to be like a 5-year build that they're doing in two years, which is amazing.
You know, and it just happens, you know, and I've been paying attention to this too, is our weather this year, over the past, and I love the fact that we get a lot of rain and, you know, I love our winters and everything. But we don't usually get this much weather, inclement weather like we've had this year. And I almost thought maybe, you know, this might hold us back, but you know what? It's not going to stop us because all they have to do is set up another shift of workers and they continue doing what they do all through the night. And it's not going to, this stadium will not fall behind schedule. It's going to open when it needs to, when it's supposed to be open and ready to go for UNLV and for future Las Vegas Raiders football.
Yeah, that's really good because, you know, getting that project done in time is a handful, very big handful, because, you know, it's immense. It's a huge project. It's a $1.8 billion stadium, and, you know, it's great. I mean, again, I get speeches very easily, but it's amazing because, you know, I see that all the curves and I see where pieces are going to fall into place. But it's like, you know, it makes me excited. Is it's like, whoa, we're stepping up our game here in Las Vegas. Everyone is stepping up their game. I'm like, whoa, because, you know, you see the newness of it is so amazing. Then with that, with the two different fields come in, like the Cardinals in Phoenix, and it's just, you know, for both of us to have the retractable field and everything, it's just amazing how the engineers and everyone are able to put that together so fast and able to, you know, have everything work smoothly and solve all the problems with ease because, you know, for something like that, that's really hard to do.
Yep, for sure.
We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Spit in Silver and Black on the Silver Black Pride Podcast Network on SB Nation.